This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 123 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we do like all good fans do and postulate on how dramatically different the show would be if we made sweeping changes to the cast of characters with little or no regard for logic, reason, the concept of life or death, or the very watchability of the program in general. It's blatant fanfic run amok, and we're stomping all over your eardrums with reckless abandon. Worst podcast ever. I am your host, Haley Malley, and with me in the GPR studios this week is Keir Hansen. Keir, how are you today?
Sports ball!
Yay! Woo-hoo. No one's going to get mad about that. And also with me this week is Jay Witten. How are you today, Jay?
I am doing fantastic. So, we've all done it. We've all sat around with other Doctor Who fans wondering what it would possibly accomplish to pair off or regroup any number of the dozens of actors and roles that, you know, we've been given over the program over the 51 years. Sometimes it's done in an attempt to create a super group of, you know, villain vanquishing intellects, like putting Capaldi with Romana 2. Other times it's something bordering on adult fan fiction, usually involving Captain Jack, River Song, or more often than not, both. So tonight, with your contributions, we'll be toying with the idea of the yearbook superlatives of the Hooniverse and having some fun with those deemed most likely to succeed, fail, vaporize a star system, you know, whatever comes our way.
I'm looking forward to this. we put this out to the peoples to chime in, but I think we personally probably had more fun with putting these combinations together.
Oh yeah,
because this is the kind of thing, you know, and how timely this is coming up a couple of weeks before Galley 1, because this is the kind of thing on any con night towards the later hours or the wee hours
when the bottles start to run low.
Precisely, and people start saying, "Hey, I got an idea. I got hold on, shut up a second. What if?" Finish sentence here.
Okay, yeah. D, shut up. What did you think?
Yeah, so this, like we said last week, you know, this came about just because of a picture pairing Strax with the Fourth Doctor, which, I mean, come on, that's just gold right there. You know, the two of those would be absolutely hilarious with, you know, Starkey giving his complete deadpan straight man performance to Tom Baker's, you know, frantic Fourth Doctor.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but the question is, you got to wonder though, would anything ever get accomplished?
Oh, absolutely not. Nothing whatsoever.
All right. And that's some of the things that I wanted to be able to play around with some of these. I thought about, you know, what would be some combinations that would be particularly really effective, like towards going, you know, going after their, you know, whatever their challenge of the week may be. Mm-hmm. And then ones where it was just a matter of you were doing it simply because the two of them would just be uproarious together, probably enjoying each other's companies. Then there's ones that are hilarious together because they hate each other, or ones where they were just completely inept for any number of reasons. So, and then all the permutations in between. And I think looking over the list that we've all compiled here, which is dozens and dozens of these combinations long, it pretty much runs the gamut.
Right. And so, it's clearly stuff that we would just find entertaining, not anything that could remotely sustain a show for any period of time.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah. That's probably the case with damn near all of these. I don't think any one of these are ones where, maybe with a few exceptions, where they would make some interesting scenes, to drop in if you were doing some
sort of... This would make some great web content, Stephen Moffat.
Oh, you mean that promised web content that we were going to... Where do we want to start, Jay?
Oh, I don't know, because we've got a good mix here, and I'm just like, where do you jump in? There is no rhyme or reason at all.
We've got our respective lists. Why don't we each grab one and just start going around?
All right, that sounds good. So the first one that I've got on my list, this is the first thing that has ever popped into my mind when I decided to mash two of them together, is imagine how much just sass would be traded back and forth if you had the Ninth Doctor on screen with Donna.
Yeah. Yeah, the response to all the spaceman retorts and those things. I worry that, because it's very similar to a combination that I'll throw at you next. But having those two together, I think, aside from just all of the verbal slander being thrown back and forth, they'd be very close to a fist fight.
Oh, and
or
yeah,
at least a bitch slap fight.
I can see them like just in each other's face in the middle of the TARDIS quite frequently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, that's the thing that, you know, 10 kind of took everything that was essentially Donna in stride and, you know, kind of tried to polish her rough edges and, you know, played down to her at times and things like that. And, you know, 9 wasn't like that. 9 is like, look, you're going to follow my rules. This is what's going on and this is how it's, and Donna would not have that. Mm.
Well, 10 would diffuse her with something comedic or off kilter or non sequitur that would just kind of throw her off her rails for a minute, mm-hmm. and would kind of take some of the bluster out of her. 9 usually tries to cease any sort of any rebuttal that he's getting with a snide remark or some kind of a quick, you know, shutdown line,
yeah.
which would just rile her up further. It's just it's putting out a fire with petrol. So it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So the one that I wanted to throw back at you, because I think it would be a similar kind of contrast, but with, I think, far more disastrous results, would be the what I call the nothing but shouting combination of Donna and the Sixth Doctor.
Yeah.
So you've got the ego and the mouth. You know, so the two of them, I think, is rather than there would be a certain point where I think words would fail them and they would just reach for each other's hair.
Yeah, I can definitely see it playing out that way. Either that or, you know, 6 had those great, you know, over the top insults that were just so deliciously intellectual that I think a lot of them would fly over Donna's head, which would infuriate her further.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the moment she realized that she's being slighted or that she's being trash talked in essentially a foreign language to her.
Yeah.
She would be beating him with her purse.
Stabbing him to death with his own cat pin.
Yeah. We'd actually see him getting choked out for a change. So, you know.
Yeah. That's probably true.
Could be fun.
Haley, who have you got?
Okay. Well, one that I just think would be delightfully insane together is Missy and the human version of the TARDIS.
Oh, dear God.
Just, you know, a crazy off for the Doctor.
I don't think it doesn't matter which of our doctors was in the room at the time. I think it would just be the neck ping pong back and forth watching the exchange. I don't think he'd dare to get a word in edgewise on that conversation. Oh, no.
Something tells me he would be hiding in a box. And every last one of them, too. Even like 6 would be like, no, I'm not getting in the middle of this. That would be hilarious, though. I mean,
I'll just sweep up the hair when it's all over.
Because, I mean, you have to admit, Missy had that element of, like, you know, the camaraderie that – it really was kind of camaraderie that the Doctor and the Master have developed over, you know, decades. Mm-hmm. And then you put her in a female form, and it's like it kind of morphed into an admiration and not romantic love, but, you know, there was affection there. Mm-hmm.
It's and then I know you as well as you know yourself kind of relationship.
Right. And then obviously you've got, you know, the TARDIS who, you know, is really his wife for all intents and purposes. You know, it's like, yeah, that would be highly, highly flammable and so entertaining. It'd be mm-hmm. great.
Yeah. You know, just to spin closely off of that, something that this isn't necessarily a hypothetical. This is something that could still hang out there somewhere because we haven't considered this permutation, but we haven't had an opportunity to see whether or not Missy will ever come up against River.
Yeah.
Speaking of a protecting force around the Doctor, that's going to have to sit out there for a bit.
Yeah, that's actually quite frightening. Mm.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Gaiman's not done writing yet, so he might not have seen the last of Idris.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next one for you, Jay.
All right. So, you know, one of the ones that kind of stood out to me when I started thinking, okay, what about just doctors? Like, you know, we've done the multi-doctor stories and we've had, you know, with the two doctors where you've got, you know, far ends of the spectrum almost instead of just, these are the ones we can mash together right now that are close. And I started thinking, you know, how much fun would it be to have 11 team up with two? I mean, to have Patrick Troughton's doctor and Matt Smith's doctor, you know, running at every chance. And then slide around the corner and run off the other direction. And it's like,
run in, make a bunch of weird statements, and then run out again. A lot of running involved.
Yeah.
Their companions are probably about two blocks back having their own adventure because they can never keep up. At a certain point, they just break off and say, you know what, let's just go get some chips. I can't do this. I'm exhausted. I get it. That actually works out pretty well. Because it actually feeds into one of the hypotheticals that was contributed to us, and I'll get around to that in a minute. But it does leave Jamie and Amy standing there saying, you know, we could just catch the next train back to Edinburgh, home before dawn.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. But I thought I started thinking about particularly effective teams. Ones that really had similar skill sets that based on whatever adventure they were placed into, they would be particularly effective. And that led me to think that if we were taking the sort of the Sherlock parallel that some of our most enjoyable episodes tend to have, you've got Tom Baker's Fourth Doctor and Madame Vostra. So literally the sort of the remake of the, you know, the idea of, well, Baker himself has actually portrayed Sherlock on a number of occasions. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the head of the Paternoster gang, who's, you know, your investigatory team during the same time period. So it runs that parallel. I think they'd be pretty damn effective at piecing things together. You could even throw 12th into that mix because he has that same sort of strategic analysis.
Yeah.
And study of the situation.
Yeah, that would actually be very entertaining to watch. I mean, just because, let's face it, one of the reasons that we love the Doctor is because he is so intelligent. And that's one of the reasons why Vastra is able to be considered a close personal friend is because she's on par with him. So, mm-hmm. You know, it would almost be similar to the Fourth Doctor and Romana.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a certain degree, just in terms of the humor or just the timing of the humor, you know, Baker wasn't out of control. He was rarely to be taken seriously, but he was never reckless in that regard. You know, so he could be even at times when he seemed like he wasn't really paying attention to everything that was going on. He was cataloging all the details to be revealed or pieced together at another time. And I think that's something that Vostra at times kind of parallels. You know, she can joke around with Jenny a little bit and be able to sort of, you know, keep a light heart at the moments when it's absolutely necessary. But she's always business, whether she appears to be or not. She's taking notes. She's making her list. She's observational. So I think that balance of business and pleasure kind of parallels nicely between them too.
Yeah, true. Haley, what's your next one?
Well, just another coming off of a Fourth Doctor pairing, putting Osgood with the Fourth Doctor, since that seems to be her doctor, you know, her fangirl moments, if she happened to ever meet him, I think would be quite fantastic.
Oh, that would.
Well, she does. It could just be Osgood and the Curator on their very careful adventures, not too overly done. He's a little tired. He's a little... No running, just step onto the bus, step off the bus.
I'm seeing like every scene playing out where it's like the camera's focused on the doctor, and then, you know, he says something to her and the camera pans and she's just sitting there like huge grin plastered on her face, just staring at him.
Whatever you want to do.
Oh, it'd be great.
Have to bust out the inhaler.
So
he gets winded and has to sit down every couple of feet. She gets winded and has to sit down every couple of feet for totally different reasons.
So, all right. So one of the ones that obviously you can have a lot of fun with is Strax. And I started thinking, I'm like, okay, we'll do Strax and 10 or, ooh, Strax and Mickey or Strax and Sarah Jane. And it led me to realize that Strax is basically the ultimate team player here. You could put Strax with damn near anyone.
That's what indentured servitude will do for you. He has to be a team player because he's under court obligation.
Yeah.
And that explosive device at the base of his neck.
But I mean, there are very few people that I was able to point out and be like, no, they probably wouldn't work all that well with him.
Yeah.
But they're few and far between. I mean, come on, Jamie and Strax would be brilliant.
Jamie'd be terrified of him. Yeah, I mean, Jamie never comes around to trust any alien life forms. He understands, he accepts what he's told, but he's still inherently terrified of everything that screams, not of this earth, not of my country, not of my century. It's weird, it's damn near witchcraft.
Yes, but just at the point where Strax begins to understand gender, you put him with Jamie and it just all breaks.
Yeah, okay. I get it. Well, I decided to take that sort of an idea as far as the what would make the good teamwork together, and then I realized, you know, we've had a couple of characters who were of the same profession that would have on paper teamed up well, but then you think about it, and they never actually did what they set out to do. We've got what I refer to as our medical response team who rarely perform medicine. And that's Dr. Martha and Nurse Rory. How often did they ever actually apply their medical training?
Well, Martha, in the very first episode she was in, and then when she was on Torchwood. And as far as I can remember, that's it.
And Rory, like, you know, checked his dad's blood or something one time, I think.
There's one writer who said, oh, yeah.
Oh, hey, Strax would have been in there, too, because he's a nurse.
Okay.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
See, Strax.
No, but see, Strax, we've actually seen Strax do medical performances.
That's right. He couldn't be on that team.
No. Because he more than rarely performed. Although he and Martha could be in a lactating team. No,
that's sorry.
Haley, what do you got next?
Let's see. Well, speaking of Rory, I call this my we're going to need another Timmy team. So it's Rory and Jack. And they just, you know, they hang out and then they die on every adventure together.
With occasional appearances by Clara.
Yeah, guess right. Hi, mates. I came into... Ah! Who hung that piano up there?
Every episode is just a race to see which one of them, you know, makes it further in the episode before they die.
Right. Well, it's like in Guardians of the Galaxy where they have that little competition with the little lizard things, you know, which one, everyone doesn't get eaten. It's like that.
That would have a great theme song to that spinoff show. They're dead and they're back. They're dead and they're back. Okay. Crap. All right. You know what? I'll go along with that sort of a thing. I'm going to take the Rory card and run with it. There has to be some moment where, you know, at the end of some massive, you know, battle sequence, explosions, people running around, unit rappelling in on cables and Dalek bits flying all about, and all of a sudden the scene cuts away to some very quiet corner pub where Mickey, Danny, and Rory are all sitting there just hanging on to their bottles, leaning back from the bar saying, you know, I can't, how do you deal with this? How, guys, what do you do? I mean, you come home, all you want to do is have a pizza, watch the game. You know, and you had to put Reese in there as well.
Yes, Reese.
So let Reese sit down with them too. And they just get to sit there and sympathize about being the husband's, the abandoned husband's team.
Oh, that could be funny. That would make for a great, like, sitcom spinoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got, like, a book club.
And you would tie it into Doctor Who every week, too. Like, you'd see them hanging out, and then, you know, at the end of the episode, Clara comes in with, you know, whatever detritus from the adventure that she just got done with in the episode before this. Yeah.
Just the tentacle of some animal hanging off her ear.
No, oh, that could be fun.
I'm picturing that book club now. I'm running with this idea. I see Reese come running. Guys, I just found this book, The 50 Shades of Grey. Have you read this? It's fantastic. I couldn't put it down. I'm pretty sure that Gwen's got handcuffs.
Oh, so the next one that I thought of, and this was my team of people that, you know, I always wanted to see more of, but never really got to. And I would love to see, you know, these two team up because they're so great, is Brian Pond and Perkins, the engineer from Mummy on the Orient Express.
See him just back there, like in some room with soldering irons, just putting weird crap together. This is going to be great.
Now Perkins would be doing something and Brian would be documenting it.
Exactly. Just waiting for the doctor to return again to use all these trinkets that they've been building boxes and boxes of, just piling up on the shelves.
I'm like, these are the two guys that the doctor has, you know, had basically offered an invitation to, and they both kind of turned him down. It's, you know, I want to see the adventures that these guys go on that, you know, the doctor was too vanilla for them. Yeah.
Haley, you're up.
All right. Well, this one, I was perfect as a webisode for me. My God, the hair, River and Fourth Doctor. Just them, like, mixing up each other's products and hairbrushes and such in the TARDIS bathroom.
But you gotta put Mel in there, too.
Oh, jeez.
It's just all of them just doing the, what is that, that spider knot where everybody just braids their hair together and they run around in circles.
And then there's the obvious obligatory episode where they get lice.
They're all like space alien lice, though, that you can't get rid of.
That make you forget.
You couldn't get rid of regular lice with all that hair.
All right. How do I leapfrog off of that?
Transition from that.
You don't. You just change gears and turn left.
All right. Well, okay. No, because I can go with the river thing. So I thought about a particularly effective support team that basically built on the wealth of knowledge at the Time Lord's disposal. And we've got characters that we have not really allowed to really utilize their Time Lady essence. So the Time Lady Syndicate using Gromana and River Song. Because, you know, high intellects, the regenerative abilities, Romana goes on to a tremendous career in the extended universe for those of you who choose to pursue it. And we still don't know, you know, where things stand right now. But I think the two of them could be particularly effective if River ever found her way back to Gallifrey. Just a thought.
Yeah, that would definitely be something I'd be interested in reading the adventures of.
Mm-hmm. Right. River interacting with any other Time Lords or ladies would actually be extremely interesting because we've only ever seen her with the Doctor.
Yeah. So we don't really know whether she would be at all respectful to them or treat them with disdain because she knows what they've done to her beloved. So, yeah.
I think it would be a week by week basis with that
one. Moment by moment.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, taking River a little bit further and you think, okay, well, you know, there's so many completely badass women in the show. And, you know, you look at some of them and they're at complete opposite ends of the spectrum, but they're still completely badass. I think the ones that portray that the most would be actually River Song and Kate Stewart.
Okay.
I mean, you've got, you know, Kate with all of her training and all of her resources and everything that, you know, control of unit and all that stuff. And then you've got River Song, who's basically, no, this looks like fun. Let's do it.
It's lawful good and chaotic good.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It's basically what it boils down to. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. I do think that because River can play by the rules when she believes that it's the best path of action.
Yeah.
She's just the first one to sandblast the corners off of those rules when she realizes they have their limitations.
Mm-hmm.
As for Kate Lethbridge-Stewart, she's pulled rank a few times, you know.
Imagine her trying to pull rank on River Song.
No, I'm just saying in terms of, you know, understanding her position within unit and her authority and her need to go by the book, there are still, I think there's still a side of her that realizes that even all the authority and position in the world has its limitations, and there are moments when you're going to have to go outside the boundaries to accomplish what needs to be done because you don't have time for bureaucracy.
Right. I mean, I think it could be a particularly effective team.
Yeah, I think they'd bring out the best in each other.
And it could almost go complete buddy cop as well.
Again, get going with the theme songs.
It'd be just like The Heat, except, you know, spacey.
Exactly.
And it would not be like Turner and Hooch.
You do remind me a little of Hooch.
Hooch is crazy.
All right.
All right.
You got what do you got?
I mean, we've been going with River for a while, so I'll stick with that. We've got, you know, the Doctor, but there are other people who are not that Doctor. So River and Martha being different kinds of doctors. Dr. River Song, Dr. Martha Jones.
True, true. All right.
I don't know what they do together, but, you know, whatever.
I got a feeling that Martha would seethe at meeting River, having accomplished what she had never been able to do.
Yeah.
I think she's over it.
Maybe.
You know, she's married now. She's fine.
Yeah, she landed Badass Mickey.
Yeah.
B-A-M. Bam.
Bam, bam.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be fun, though. That could be interesting.
I will round out the River discussion. this will be the last, because pretty much we just want to see, you know, all the River Song we possibly can. But I wanted to make the super group here and call this the League of Lady Assassins. So you've got River Song, Vostra and Jenny, and Leela.
Oh, God.
See, this is the one that Keir stole from me, except for Leela, because I don't know who she is yet. But yeah.
So you've got basically... I'm just picturing where the knives are being held. So Vostra's got it held in two hands over her head. Jenny's got one at her side ready to lunge. River Song has one hidden in her bodice. And Leela has her knife stuck between her teeth. Essentially, you're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, you see that coming at you and you just, yeah, there's no chance. You're done.
Especially, they all come like tumbling in on the ribbons, on the ceiling vents.
Although I do have to say, you know, if you've got to go, there are worse ways.
I guess so.
Jay's putting in his request now. If he has to be assassinated, send this team.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so I think we're done with River. I think we've...
I think so.
I think we've paired her off with anyone and everyone that we possibly can.
10 to 20 mentions is just about enough.
All right. So the... I had a lot of fun figuring out doctors that we're not going to see together, you know, and seeing which ones would actually be a lot of fun. Honestly, one of the ones I thought of that would be like, this would be so much fun just to see how pissed off people would, you know, how much they would piss people off. And that's, you know, basically the anti-human league between 1 and 12.
Grumpy old doctors.
With occasional appearances of 6 just passing through the room. I totally agree.
Just throw the random insult in there and, you know, drive it home further, yeah.
The disdain of humanity.
But I mean, it's like, you know, these two have had some of the greatest, like, I cannot believe I'm stuck around humans lines. That it's like, you know, you put them in a room with a bunch of humans and people are going to want to murder them within 45 seconds. Mm-hmm.
Not the warm and cuddly type, or voted least likely to be invited to sit down and tell the kids Christmas stories by the fire.
Yeah.
Although that's exactly what they wanted William Hartnell to do. They absolutely wanted him to be the fireplace grandpa, which we'll get to. We discussed one of our news stories for tonight. All right. What else you got on here?
My last one was, if there was anyone that could flirt with a mountain range, Jack and Clara together, and I imagine this taking place in a bar and them like maybe making bets about who can get whose phone number or something. This is Clara pre-Danny, but yeah.
I would bet that knowing their dating egos, that their attempt to hit on one another would be showing each other how many other people's phone numbers they could get before the night was out.
No, that's what I meant. Like, they were making a bet. I bet I could get her phone number before you can.
Yeah, but in doing so, it's all foreplay for one another.
Say, yeah, they spend the entire night going after everyone else in the pub and yet wind up at home together.
Yeah,
that's totally how that would play out.
Yeah, it would. All right. See, what else I got on here? Oh, this is just a little quick one. I just thought about it because as I was running through some of the doctors and thinking about companions that I think they would have particularly clicked with is what I would refer to as the faculty lounge. And that's Fifth and Martha because of their tendency to assess and study the situation. They're very methodical in that regard. And Martha's the consummate mental note taker, and Fifth is kind of our classroom teacher persona. So I think the two of them would kind of pair off nicely together. But this, by the same token, you could even involve, if you wanted to, and put Seventh in there as, you know, our professor, in that regard, because he loved to pontificate about all the things that he knew
rolled
his R's and things.
Yeah, and then throw Clara in just because she's a teacher.
True. Although she always looked a little out of place in the classroom. Her students basically ate her lunch every day.
Yeah. And then, so my next one that I came up with is, I would love to see the old war buddies, the Brigadier, Alistair Gordon, Lethbridge Stewart, and Wilfred Mott. Can you imagine these two on screen together?
Sitting back in big, comfortable armchairs with a scotch neat on the armrest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally could.
I would throw in with them the war doctor, just being all curmudgeon-y over in his chair.
You actually fought with bullets? Bullets?
Oh, you silly monkeys.
Yeah. I'd love to see that. Technology.
Well, I know Jay is trying to intentionally avoid mention of a couple of, so I'm going to dodge past that one for a second and go towards. We hadn't been mentioning a lot of villains, so, and I know that we've all, I'm going to put this out quickly because we've all thought about it and we've all even seen the t-shirts of it, but it does bear mentioning what we would refer to as the staring contest or the ultimate game of blink. So if you do put the Silence and the Weeping Angels in the room together and make them look at each other, is there a true victor if the Weeping Angels are always time locked and can't remember what froze them and the Silence can't look away, so they continually get forgotten? And the game goes round and round and round.
Yeah. That'd be a great way to put it, Leo. It's like, oh, crap, we've got both these guys. Quick, put them in a room together. All right, we're safe.
Until Jack comes in and starts humping one or the other of them.
The Jack Harkness wearing a belt and suspenders because he literally cannot keep his pants on.
Chastity suspenders. They're actually time-locked.
Yeah, that was his form of punishment for all the cons he was pulling with the time agency.
Okay. Haley comes in with one at the last minute here.
Oh, great.
In the 11th
hour.
This
is a good one.
I didn't want to sleep tonight anyway.
Go with it. I love it.
My creepy kids pairing. The Are You My Mummy kid in the gas mask. And then the kid under the blanket, if it was a kid under a blanket, in little Danny's room.
Might be the same kid.
I was about to say, it was the Are You My Mummy kid. It's like, if you take the blanket off and it's like, oh dear God, it's worse.
Could you imagine? I think the viewing public's head would explode. Huh.
999 would get overrun with calls. They just died of a heart attack. I don't know what happened.
Just watching some kids show and you just dropped.
Did want to also make mention, and this is something we'll build on in a second because we had some listener contributions that sort of ran with this sort of theme. Mm-hmm. But giving back to the old sod in Scotland, you know, the Highlands and the Lowlands, putting the 12th and Jamie together so that at times they could just sit back and argh and argh about everything and get nothing else accomplished.
That's fine. That works.
Yep, just brogues as far as the eye can see.
You may not understand anything that's being said, but it'll be highly entertaining.
But basically, it's got like Jamie could have been the tourist poster boy for Scotland. Come out and see the Highlands, where we all have Highland lilting voices, and we run around in the heather and the thistle, and it's lovely. And it's like Braveheart without the beheading all the time. And it's wonderful. And then there's 12th. You're gonna come here. You're gonna freeze. It's gonna rain on you. You're gonna die.
Yeah, that's about it too.
If you stand in one place too long, someone will hit you with a rock. Oh.
I'm telling you because it'll be me. Oh,
all right.
Go ahead and go with your scare because I think that mine would kind of break it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are incorporating all character sources here. So because this is kind of near and dear to me, I know that Jay feels very similarly about it, and I've actually gotten a number of listeners to come around on it as well. And that's the Eighth Doctor Adventures from Big Finish. You would have the opportunity to meet Lucy Bleeden Miller, who was, I think in my estimation, everything that Rose's character could have been. I'm not going to say should have been, because that would belittle anything that, that Rose Tyler became, but could have been as far as a companion that didn't go the romantic involvement route. And if you haven't had the opportunity to kind of get exposed to what that's all about, please do. Go out, spend the money, drop the dimes, get the audiobooks. You will thank me later. You will thank me later.
Yeah.
But as far as their character types, I think Rose and Lucy would make excellent pub mates. You know, they'd be those two girls just having a huge laugh at the pub and whatnot, getting all the guys' attention and things, thinking that they're just a couple of, you know, goofy slags until they get, you know, torn up one side and down the other. Because neither of these girls are particularly be messed with when they don't want that sort of treatment.
See, this I see as, you know, Lucy being the bad influence on Rose. Rose just trying to, you know, go and work at the shop and have her life and, you know, enjoy things. And Lucy's always getting her into trouble.
Well, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily true, because Lucy had her opportunities to get into a lot of really awful situations, especially when she was working alongside Tamsin and things like that. And she tended to be the voice of reason from time to time. So I think everybody's got their limitations. Yeah. Maybe between these two, she was the one who was a little more voted most likely to set fire to someone's locker, but but not by much. It's
only because it happened
one time. They weren't kidding about that permanent record thing.
All right, so that leads to my I'm going to call this my two-parter, because there's two different aspects to this, and the first being my pairing of, you know, you get these two together and there are zero f**ks given. Absolutely none. And that would be Lucy Miller and Jack Harkness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not walking away from a damn thing.
Yeah.
Ever.
Never once. And, you know, this would, I would love to see these two together, because, I mean, their personalities are so, so great, so huge. And it's just one of those things that it's like, you could not help but be entertained.
I think one of the things, and it goes along with how they have this kind of a go ahead, whatever you've got to do sort of an attitude, is because their personalities are very angular. Jack goes at things with very clear cuts because there's very little, sense of risk on his part. So, you know, he sort of goes at things a devil may care because he's willing to put everything on the line every given time. Lucy, in all of the situations where we see her lay it all out there, is done because she just cares that much more. And when she feels that it's the right thing to do, she puts these sort of heroic blinders on and doesn't regard the consequences, because it doesn't matter. There's an end and a means to get there, and that's all that matters. Whereas Jack just says, oh, sure, yeah, take a limb, I'll grow it back, I got places to go. So what's the alternate side of that pairing that you had in mind, aside from their sort of a, you know, close your eyes and jump guns blazing, or have you fired both your guns in the air whilst screaming, ah?
Well, all right, so obviously when I pair these two up, I'm talking about, you know, Jack pre-Children of Earth, because let's face it, things took a turn at that point. And I was like, you know, Jack wasn't the only one that made me want to open a vein, because Lucy kind of pulled it too. So if you imagine Jack at the end of Children of Earth and his, you know, sacrifice at the end of that, and then pair it up with the end of Lucy's story and her sacrifice in that, and I'm like, oh dear God, this would be the pairing to end all hope for anything at all.
Yeah, yeah. There are a few sequences from the, you know, all the content, whether it's spinoffs, the primary storyline or the extended material or things, where I can look at a sequence, I can look at the transcript on a page and look at a couple of lines written and realize this is one of the most painful moments in this universe's path that we've been exposed to. You know, there are a couple of others that sort of bottom you out like that, but these are some of the absolute troughs as far as the highs and lows. And yeah, once again, it revolves around these two characters for very, very different reasons. But yeah, I can absolutely agree with that.
Well, that's a great way to end right there.
Well, we're not going to end. We're going to turn it over to the listeners, because we got some pretty good contributions this time around as well.
Yeah.
thankfully, one of our listeners, Ben, sort of first tossed something in on Twitter and then backed it up with another note on Facebook. So thanks for hitting both those social networks, Ben. I appreciate that. Yeah. Had Very first nice. Said, and this actually goes along with the extended content because this is something where we had gotten a little bit of exposure to two characters, Iago and Lightfoot, back and forth Doctor stories along with Leela. But then thought, all right, if we're going to have this kind of very volatile combination, damn near explosive in terms of their tendencies, and then go ahead and put Strax in there too. And sure, throw the fourth Doctor in there for another random element and just see what happens, kids. Or see how much of London is still left standing at the end of it all. but I will say, as entertaining as that was, and by the way, Dan Starkey says he's totally on board for that one, by the way. He also thought of a great combination that jumps old school and new by taking Donna Noble and bringing back good old Duggan. basically the ham-fisted clod that Fourth Doctor had to deal with quite often. So basically he refers to it as the fist and the gob. So one of the most unabashed meatheads in Classic Who, along with the mouth that just won't stop. So,
you know, I had never considered it, but as soon as he posted this, as soon as I read it, I was like, oh dear God, Donna married the wrong man.
Okay. Yeah, because she could just point, so she'd get into an argument, say, Astro, I've had about enough of you, Duggan, and he would just come in.
Just complete football tackle.
And they'd go down the boardwalk and get a frozen custard.
Yeah.
What else have we got from the listener mailbox?
All right. So apparently Julie likes the idea of the you know, dueling brogues, and she wanted to pair the 12th Doctor with Molly O'Sullivan from the Dark Eyes series.
So we'll all understand half of what is said. It'll be great.
Well, Molly's got that. I don't know. For those of you who have been keeping up with Dark Eyes, by the way, Chapter 4 coming out soon. Just hang on. Molly is phenomenal. She's a great character. She's gotten sort of a little bit less use in Series 2 and even less in Series 3 for production reasons for the Dark Eyes story. But she's, as far as her interactions with Eighth Doctor, she's kind of the take-no-guff type. She reminds me, to a certain degree, of Clara and a lot of the companions who just don't seem to be rattled once they get exposed to the breadth and scope of all the things that the TARDIS and the Doctor can bring to light. You know, there's that moment of acceptance. You know, she steps out and says, it's 1947 and I haven't aged. You know, those kind of things. But once that clicks in, nothing phases her. And she's just, oh, you can go ahead and talk to me, Doctor, with your tardy box flying through space and time. Like, you know, and it just doesn't seem to phase her. So the 12th Doctor, with his brogue and trying to school everybody in this angry professorial way, Molly would have absolutely zero to do with it. And I think their accents would get even thicker to the point where they're just screaming at each other and we would have to turn closed captioning on.
Well, that wouldn't get any better with Badger's first offering. Because this is a theme. I'm seeing this from so many people. It's a running theme here. But he said that we need the Scottish trifecta. We need 12, Amy, and Jamie.
Okay. Yeah. Although Amy's brogue would have to step up.
Oh, she can do it. Like, I've heard Karen Gillan speak with her natural brogue, mm-hmm. and you don't understand anything. Like, it is so thick that you don't get it at all. Like, even with subtitles on, I'm like, I'm not sure. I don't know.
It just says in square English brackets at the bottom. But, pointless babbling.
I mean, she's gone a long way to getting rid of the, you know, the extreme of it, at least, and actually has a passable English accent now, I'll say. Mm-hmm. Or American accent. Sorry.
Real words. Badger also did chime in, though, with
This is my favorite.
This is not shipping. We're not calling this shipping because it's too twisted to be considered shipping. And that would be the self-incestuous
masturbatory.
Yes, it's the masturbatory pairing. So write it down, kids. You heard it here first. You probably haven't heard it here first, actually. There's nothing is sacred in slash fiction. So John Sims' master, Missy, and their whole brood of unholy children. So all these little one-eyed monsters, three
just
arms.
Just dancing and murdering people would be great.
Oh, jeez. I
see them slaughtering their classmates and stringing them up with marionette string.
And here I thought Haley's "Are You My Mummy, Kid?" and, you know, thing under the blanket was the worst thing I was going to hear tonight.
Jeez. Can you imagine the doors of the master's TARDIS opening and just this whole brood of icky little things?
I'm picturing Children of the Corn looking, you know, like, no.
I just, what kills me is I'm seeing all these kids come running out of the TARDIS, and the camera is set down low. So you're just seeing things from about kid level down. And then you see the knees, and it pans up to see Sims and Gomez arm in arm, just having that, like, we're just walking out of church kind of pose together, looking at each other.
Crazy eyes from both of them.
With the crazy eyes locked on one another, and then they look out to the camera, and they both start cackling for about 4 minutes straight. And the camera doesn't cut away.
That's all right. Nightmares are
coming. The laughter of the children in the background.
Which could easily be mistaken for baby weeping angels.
That's exactly where my mind went to, but I didn't want to voice it.
Although that would be something. They're all on a playground together. So all the
little masterlings. The Are You My Mummy Kid, the Kid Under the Blanket, and the Cherubs. Yeah.
It's the most horrible, horrible primary school ever.
Jeez.
Our city of perpetual death. All right. And our contribution from Soleil, I'm not really sure where this would go. I would watch it for sheer watchability factor. People wanted to know whether it was going to happen in the series to come, but I don't really see it happening. Would be Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor and Jack Harkness. Don't know how they'd get along.
Yeah, I'd want to see how it played out, because it's one of those nebulous things that you're not sure.
I guess if it were to happen, I think it would have to happen at a point where maybe this is just after Jenna Coleman's departure. Mm-hmm. If he has some solo travel time before the next companion is introduced, or the next companion is locked in, I should say, if it is somebody we've already met. And he would have an opportunity to kind of go on one quick running adventure that involved either Jack as we know him now, or, well, I should say Jack as we knew him then, because we haven't seen him in a while, and he doesn't quite look the same. Sorry,
right. Mr. Barrowman. Doesn't I mean, quite we love look- John Barrowman, but, you know, it's time has passed.
Right, so maybe we cross paths with him somewhere along his path to the face of Bo?
Oh, man. It would be entertaining, though, because I imagine, you know, Jack being Jack, doing whatever he's going to do, and the doctor being like, no, you can't do that. Get down from there. Put that away. You can't do that.
And Jack zip just, that back up.
Jack basically just, like, flirting with him, turning around and walking off.
Well, you know, if anyone is not going to notice that Jack looks different, it would be the 12th Doctor.
This is true.
And if anyone would have a more fascinating response to Jack's blatant advances, I think it would be Peter Capaldi. I don't think anyone could probably shut down Captain Jack better than the eyebrows of ferocity.
I would love to see that. I would love to see Jack turn the charm all the way up to 11 and, like, really try for it. And Capaldi just, like, glare at him from over the TARDIS console, and Jack's face just be like, oh my God, what just happened here? It didn't work.
Like, Capaldi's eyebrows keep going down and Barrowman's keep going up.
Or the inverse.
Wow. Oh, that would be great. This was a lot of fun, just throwing stuff together and seeing what stuck.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of these that I hadn't considered, and, like, once we said them out loud, I'm like, oh dear God, this is the greatest thing ever. I want to see this.
Well, going into next week, since we still have about, as we record here, we are 10 days away from Gallifrey 1, and we will be doing some live casting from there. But for next week, we decided, since we are going to be seeing a large number of vendors represented and a lot of Whovian paraphernalia getting flung about, we thought to ourselves, is there a limit to what you could possibly put a BBC-sanctioned logo or brand stamping on? So with Who-themed merchandise, is there a point where you say, that's too far? Or, nope. Oh, okay, Haley says no. But we're going to put the challenge.
That's podcast done.
No, because my vegetable peeler absolutely needs to have an 11th Dr. Sonic screwdriver on the end of it.
or the Riversong / Sarah Jane line of lipsticks, where you just can't remember the name of any of them for the life of me. Damn it, I cannot remember. So we are going to take it upon ourselves each to come up with a list of some possible items that, you know, you probably don't want to put a Whovian spin on that one. And I would probably say, along with that, while we're in the research process for that, we should also look and see what are currently out there. We could do this like two truths and a lie and say that, you know, here's three items. Two of these you can actually purchase. The third one we made. And I will bet you that one of us will not be able to get it right.
That could actually be a lot of fun.
All right. We'll turn it around, though. We'll make it two lies and a truth. So you go ahead and find the most outrageous Whovian item out there and then come up with two completely BS items and mix them up.
Okay, so what happens when one of us accidentally makes up something that actually exists? Because it's bonus going points. To happen.
Then
okay.
That is their gag gift for their birthday that year.
And with that, let's go over to the news.
So our first news article here, Moffat has discussed the trouble that he gets into, or the difficulties in concurrently developing Sherlock and Doctor Who.
And in the process of answering that question, he basically enrages the public by saying that he has no idea what's going on.
What, Stephen Moffat made people angry by saying something? No.
No. Well, I do like the fact that, you know, he was forthright with it and said, you know, Sherlock, yeah, I have no idea. I don't know when this is coming out. This is taking forever. Okay. But it did come along with some information. I mean, he did say that it was going to be some sort of like a temporal flashback. It was going to be a Victorian style Sherlock special that was going to be done. So
Sherlock's getting in the TARDIS. That's what's happening?
Precisely.
Yes, that's exactly what he said. We were promised Sherlock in the TARDIS back at... No,
This is the Whovian we've been waiting for. But no, I mean, he and also mentioned, you know, he's been coming along, working simultaneously on the first production block for the next series. Mm-hmm. Indicated that we are working on the first two-parter, written by Toby Whitehouse, and they are actually, as he indicates, I think, I don't know if this was the first indication of where these were going to fall in the series, but they are going to be in slots 3 and 4 of the new series, which means that whatever else they're working with in the first production block, he's already determined, you know, what he's doing. I'm assuming he's penning the season opener, and what's going into slot 2. And he's got as he says, in quote, there's a couple more lined up from some other writers, some old, some new, some middle-aged, frankly. It's a little bit early to start teasing it, but I'm a little bit excited. I think we've got some very, very good stuff going on. So that is about as reserved on details or even misleadings, intentional misleadings that we've gotten from Mr. Moffat in quite some time. So maybe he's... maybe he's trying not to anger people by spreading disinformation. And at this point, it's just saying, we're working. We're very happy. It's been very nice.
So, but we can still qualify this and call it, what do we say? Moffitsplaining.
Yes.
Well, definitely falls in.
He said a lot of words with no information in them.
Definition of Moffitsplaining. Yep. So... This next news article actually came out last week as we were recording, so we didn't get to include it. But apparently Peter Davison has decided to make it known that he doesn't think the Doctor should ever be female.
What would this guy know about Doctor Who?
I know. Completely unqualified.
Well, he's not alone. There have been a number of instances of both past companions and doctors saying that... It's not a matter of male and female. It's a matter of what the role has created as far as, and this is Davison's words, the character dynamics. Mm-hmm. And I think the issue that I have with the statements that he makes in this particular interview, which he had made with ABC Australia, came along with the line where he actually said, an uncertain, fallible female doctor with a really strong male companion. And I'm not sure if this was something where, as a result of the interview, the line was taken out of context and maybe there was some prefacing going on that was omitted, but...
It's a weird thing to say context.
What he was talking about is the, and this was from a different article, I guess. I didn't grab the same one I read earlier, but he was saying that the part of the reason why it works now is because you have the male doctor who is uncertain and, you know, and makes mistakes and things like that. And he has the strong female companion to help balance him out. Okay. And it's not, you know, it works for what it is. And he said, if you reverse that and you have an uncertain female doctor with a really strong male companion, then it's a stereotype and it's not going to work. So I would argue that, you know, maybe we can go back to having the self-assured, really strong doctor as a female. And then, have the, I don't know, Mickey as the companion or something, you know?
Right.
There are ways to go about it, but one thing that he said was, you know, I speak now as a fan who grew up watching Doctor Who, that I have trouble with the idea of a female doctor only because, you know, he figures if you're born a man on Gallifrey, then that's what you stay.
So, except for the Master.
Right. Ooh. So this is all just his opinion from this is how I grew up. This is how it always was. And I'm an old curmudgeon now and don't want to change it. Mm-hmm.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, basically. But, Davison's son-in-law is actually back in the news, and for good reasons, not for saying that women shouldn't be doing stuff. Apparently, David Tennant has been cast in a new Marvel series.
So excited about this, and I'm so worried about this, because I'm kind of worried about ending up hating David Tennant at the end of this. Because the character he plays is awful. Like, geez, he's just the worst.
Yeah, so
like Handsome Jack.
No. He's playing a character named Purple Man who, among other things, has mind control-y powers and does terrible, awful things with those powers. In fact, it says in this article, he can make heroes do absolutely degrading, awful, and terrible things. So,
yeah.
Nice. So, yeah, he'll be he'll be showing up in Netflix's AKA Jessica Jones. And, as much as I'm excited about this and I love the idea of doing this, it kind of bums me out because I'm like, well, now Marvel has burned David Tennant and they can't put him in any movies.
Sure they can. They just put this character in a movie.
How are you going to put the Purple Man in a movie? Well, I guess they did Rocket Raccoon, so... but I was wanting something bigger for David Tennant. You know, like when people started throwing his name around with Doctor Strange, I was like, okay, not the role I'd pick, but something of that caliber. You know, but...
Well, I'm just looking down the line to the movies that we know that Marvel has coming out in the next 5 years, 6 years. And in those movies, I don't see anything that I see him doing.
Right.
This I can see him as.
Yeah. I could go the route of... And it's outside of what they have on their slated plans. But if they ever went towards the Secret Wars and that sort of thing, I could see him possibly pitching the Beyonder or something like that. But I don't know. But we're crossing the stream here. Sorry.
Join us
on Legends.
Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. if you want to hear more Marvel talk.
My question, though, is because, all right, it's print, so you can basically put whatever voice in your head you want, but the Purple Man doesn't
Prince?
Have...
Oh, Prince is the purple guy, yeah.
The Purple Man doesn't, the way that they write him, he doesn't appear to have a British accent or a Scottish accent or anything, and I'm like, oh... Please tell me that they're not going to have David Tennant try and do his American accent for this show.
Yeah, that would be bad. No, I get the feeling that he's either super sophisticated American or British. He has that polished affectation.
Okay. Although, it is going to be weird hearing the doctor in the Purple Man's mouth. So maybe just let him be Scottish.
Yeah.
We'll see. What else do we have here?
Well, since we're kind of straying off off content here. There has been sort of a Bermuda's Triangle that the BBC has run into when they try and fill the slot that Doctor Who normally occupies during the off season or any of the prolonged breaks. And they've run into this issue time and time again by trying to put various programs in or various short series, most recently Atlantis, which some people really started getting into. Starry Star Pie didn't quite pan out, got canned. Before that, there was the Robin Hood series, which did okay, right? Ran yeah. two
seasons? I think it was three seasons.
Yeah,
Merlin.
I haven't seen the third one yet, but yeah.
Merlin did well, I don't think that I don't think that stayed in the same slot. It began in that Saturday night slot. They were using it. They would use it as a launch pad because they figured most people have sort of rearranged their work schedule and such to try and watch Doctor Who on Saturday nights. So as soon as that goes on hiatus, they would put something in that they want to try and float. Well, it hasn't always worked out well, but this time around, they might have a nice feather in their cap because they are going to consider, or we're kind of hoping, some sources out there are kind of hoping that they are going to pop in the new project for Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere, which has gone from book to audio cast recording as an audio audible piece, and is now getting put together for screen. I personally would be all about this because if they use anything resembling the cast that they had in the audio production, Benedict Cumberbatch
James McAvoy,
Natalie Dormer.
Natalie Dormer was amazing.
She's Natalie Dormer.
She's really easy on the eyes too. But that's again, that's a hypothetical, right now. There are other suggestions floating around there, but, I don't know. This seems to be the one that at this point could probably get the fastest green light and could probably go to production fast enough to be ready for a post series 9 hiatus, I would think.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Plus it just has the power of the game and name behind it, which could go a long way with keeping the show intriguing. The question becomes though, is it something that you expect to run longer than a miniseries, or is it just there for that pocket from December to late spring?
Well, I mean, thankfully this is the BBC and they understand that when a show is done, it's done. They don't, they don't try and drag it out for 6 seasons when, it clearly should have been done at 2.
No, they can sell it to the US and try and recast and extend part.
or just keep the same cast.
I think that if they did wind up doing this, that they would probably have a better shot at making it a quality piece than it would be if it were an American thing. But I don't know. I would love to see this actually make it to screen, though. I think that could be actually a lot of fun.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, last piece we'll put out here, and we won't dive too far into it because there's some excellent analysis and discussion done of this by a couple of the casts out there. The Verity podcast has done a great discussion on this and some recent stuff by Blogger Who, if you want to read online for it. But BBC have unearthed, I'm not sure how they came across it. There were some finds of the Desert Island Discs, which was a radio program that had been put together back in the days, back in the 60s, continues to this day, where the whole premise is celebrities and people of renown are asked if they are put on a desert island and have to choose their 8 favorite records, 1 book, and a luxury item of some sort. Obviously, with stipulations, you cannot have a canoe, you can not have a satellite phone or anything that's going to rescue you and things of that sort. But it's basically about the kind of... it's done with the presence of mind of what kind of things would you keep for your own personal enjoyment, knowing that you're going to be there for an indefinite amount of time. And they were actually unable to, they were able to unearth a 1965 recording of the selections made by William Hartnell. So we get sort of a look into some of the selections that he had made to bring along his luxury item being cigarettes. So, hey,
imagine that.
But it's really some kind of interesting things that give you some good insight into the items that are held near and dear to the individuals. Other productions that were discovered were actually those by Louis Armstrong, Diana Rigg, and actually Reverend W. Audrey, who created Thomas the Tank Engine. So of all the strange cross-section of individuals whose recordings that you're going to be able to find in these recent BBC finds, some of the things that Hartnell had actually chosen, his favorite piece of music, above all, what he considered to be his top selection, was going to be Spring Sun from A King in New York by Charlie Chaplin. So it's a score from a Charlie Chaplin piece of all the unusual things that you'd want to bring along. So I think if anything, it's just going to give us a little bit more insight into the personal life of William Hartnell and just the kind of man that he was. For those of you who really were fascinated by the biopic that was done, that sort of gave us more of an insight into who William Hartnell was than we ever had actually gotten on screen prior, or I should say since the 60s, this is an interesting little look. So search it out. And again, tune over. I know the ladies from the Verity podcast did an excellent discussion of the rundown here. So cool stuff from the time capsule.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that's about all that we've got this week. We are now well within the 2 week time frame for Gallifrey 1. And yay! Things are good.
Yeah, some of us are more excited about it than others.
Yeah.
It's okay, Haley. Calm down. It's going to be all right.
All right. Well, this has been episode 123 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, are these all the same people that were before? I'm sorry, I'd already deleted them.
This is Kier saying, all right. You're going to have to write all that down because I'm not going to remember any of it.
And this is Haley saying, Master Vittori. Get it. Get it. Hashtag banned in China.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook @facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.
Sorry, I was just yelling at Wing in text message because I've got the game recording and it just pops up and I'm like, you mother... God damn it.
French bastard.
Time check.
Jeez.
That will be our booth at Gallifrey 1 in Los Angeles, where we will be selling the Jack Harkness fleshlights. You knew I was going to say it. Feels just like a real thing.
Damn it.
And matching dildo.
It's the same item.
God damn it. I got so much shit out of this.
We went for the explicit tag this week.
You started it.
Sorry, I'm not sorry. And with that, let's go over to the news.
You guys suck.
Totally,
and don't pause either, so it makes it really hard for him to cut it out. Keep talking. Just keep talking.
Dixon Butson, Dixon Butson, Dixon Butson, Dixon Butson.
All right, so our first news article here. God damn it, I can't even talk.
Try that one over. Take two.